Ever have those nights, Nick, when all the numbers begin to gel together?
Is that happening right now?
Oh, my God. Yeah, the phone numbers just keep blending together. And anyway, let's we're going to take phone calls with you tonight now for this hour. And I got to compliment you on your work.
Well, thank you.
I mean, you're very, very thorough with what you do.
Well, I always find that, you know, specifically when you're dealing with things like cryptozoology, as I said earlier, you know, I think it's vital that we get out there to do in-the-field investigations, because that's the way we're going to get the answers. And I think that's the only way to really get across to people the nature of those investigations is to try and, you know, just record and recount for them as much material evidence and, you know, witness testimony as possible to fully appreciate, you know, potentially what's going on. So,
all right, to the phones we go. Let's go to our first time caller line. You're on the air with us on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Yes, hello.
Yes,
hello?
Take it away. Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Chicago, Illinois, sir.
Okay, go ahead, sir.
Yeah, I'd like to point out to Mr. Nick, if he by any chance heard of, there's a big vampire that roams in the center of Mexico. It's in the state of San Luis Potosí. It's a border state with Guanajuato. I happen to speak Spanish and English because I'm a Mexican Frenchman. Mm-hmm. And I went there to search some caves because I do my own explorations, you know, just for fun or whatever. About 10 miles away from San Luis, you're talking about vampires that I just thought I caught.
Mm-hmm.
I was driving me and my son, and we did see a bird, but it's a black. It's possibly it could have been him. It's got a wingspan about 20 to 25 feet, mm. And no more than about two blocks up in the air. He was flying, and this was late at night, about 10 o'clock. Several people have seen it, and when he stands up, he stands about, they say, between 7 and 8 feet tall. Mm-hmm. All black, and his face is like a human face, but they call it baby face vampire. I was just wondering if you heard about it, because obviously this gentleman, Nick, travels all over the world. And I'd just like to share this story with you.
Well, I appreciate the story. Thank you. That's really interesting. And I actually don't know about that one personally. But what I will say is that is very, very similar to a lot of the reports we get of these large man-like things with huge wings, which, as I said earlier, you know, a lot of the reports I've looked into and are aware of, you know, we're on the Texas-Mexico border. So this seems to tie in as well. And one thing that I haven't mentioned is actually that a friend of mine, John Downs, traveled to Mexico in 1998 to investigate some Chupacabras-type reports and vampire stories. And in one little town he visited, which I forget the name of now, he told me how on several of the houses in this little village, they all had crosses painted on the front door because they were deathly afraid of this vampire-type creature. So, you know, I think your story is a good one because it reinforces the fact that there are these huge winged unknown creatures in that area.
Did you ever hear of a story of a Sasquatch, Bigfoot, little ones playing with real human little kids?
No.
I had one of those calls one night, Nick.
Oh, well. No, I haven't got one of those at all.
How about throwing rocks at houses and roofs?
You know, if rocks, yes, I've heard that, and also a lot of reports of these creatures banging on trees as well. Those seem to be two of the more regular characteristics I've picked up on, but certainly, yeah, throwing rocks and stones.
Plus, you know, we get incredible calls from hunters who are out there, and they see these creatures. And what's unfortunate, though, is a lot of people, out of fear, will take a shot at whatever they're seeing.
Yeah, I think, you know, in some respects, I can understand that. I just think it's unfortunate, as I said at the beginning, you know, how are we going to get the evidence? Are we going to have to, you know, kill one of these things? That would be a shame. But, you know, I can understand that somebody's reaction when they see something which is completely alien, you know, to their normal normal things they experience, that that might be the reaction, you know, sort of shoot first and ask questions later. But in saying, in saying that, you know, there's never really even been conclusive evidence from hunters as to what these things are. Certainly there are reports of people saying they've shot Bigfoot, but it always seems to, you know, escape, or the bullets don't necessarily kill it, you know, which I guess if you've got something 8-9 feet tall that's weighing 1,000 pound, you know, a little bullet might not do that much damage. So, you know, but that's one of the hazards, is that, yes, we've got hunters out there that might get the evidence, but do we want the evidence at the expense of having to kill what could be a species that's on an evolutionary downslide anyway, possibly?
Wild Card Line, you're up with us. Nick Redfern with us. Go ahead.
Yeah, hello.
Hello.
Hi. I was wondering if the guests had heard of a Navajo Indian legend called Egloshes.
Explain it.
Well, I lived with the Navajos for a number of years, and on a like a humanitarian thing. And what it would be is that in their folklore, or witchcraft, I guess you'd say, there's a society of people that they're skinwalkers or Egloshi, and they turn into like a werewolf kind of thing. And I talked with a gentleman who I was talking to one morning. He said, yeah, there were some Egloshis out in front of my house. And he said, there's these wolf prints that when a wolf normally walks, it, you know, the paw hits the ground a certain way, but when an Egloshi walks, because it was a man, it's transformed into a wolf, but it's much heavier and it sinks much deeper into the ground. And he showed me these prints, and, you know, and they're supposed to have very different powers, supposed to be very fast, and all this kind of stuff. I don't know if that the guests had heard about that. Or
all right, let's find out. Now, we've heard about skinwalkers before.
Yeah, I know quite a lot about the skinwalker accounts and the tie-ins with, you know, Native American Indian legends and, you know, changing and shape-shifting, I guess is the best way, the classic way to describe, you know, this phenomenon of a person literally metamorphosizing or shape-shifting into a werewolf-type creature. Now, as I also mentioned earlier, one of the interesting things that surfaced in a lot of the U.S.-based werewolf-type reports is that many of them actually emanate from areas of ancient historical significance to the Native American Indians, burial mounds, you know, places like this that clearly had some sort of significance for the indigenous tribes that lived there at that particular time. Now, you know, either one of two things is happening. Either people are literally changing into these things, shape-shifting, or, you know, is it something that's, you know, conjured up some sort of supernatural entity? I'm not sure, but there's absolutely no doubt that if you look into Native American Indian culture, they have these legends, they have these tales. And today, people who have no knowledge of, you know, Native American Indian lore are still seeing these creatures in those same locations, which when you look back in the history books, you find, wow, you know, there actually was a tribe living in this area 300 years before. So I think that's significant, you know, and there's a tie in there somewhere.
Is there anything about chasing these crypto creatures that scares you, Nick? Just jump right in.
Well, I guess I jumped straight in and don't really give it a thought. But whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, I'm not sure. I think it's a good thing from the perspective of, you know, having the determination, energy, and enthusiasm to get out there. Whether it might one day backfire and, you know, you come across something really vicious, you know, I think that's one of the hazards. But on the other hand, if we don't make a systematic and determined effort to look for these things, we'll never know. So, you know, I just figure, what the heck.
And let's go east of the Rockies. What the heck? You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Well, good morning. How are you, George?
Good. Thank you.
Hello, Nick.
Hi.
Now, if you would, Nick, if you give me some time here, I just want to set this story up and turn the clock back 24 hours, George, to your numerologist.
All right.
This incident occurred to me. It happened with me on 10-4, which adds up to 5. Mm-hmm. It happened at 12:23 a.m., which is when you go in military time. would be 0023, which adds to 5. It happened at mile marker 305 on the Pennsylvania Turnpike, which is divisible by 5. I was born in the 5th month, and the damage that occurred in this incident cost my car $505.55. So I got a lot of fines involved. Now, what had happened, Nick, is I had struck a deer. Mm-hmm. Now, in this pack of deer, there were 4 deer. And when I pulled off the side of the road, obviously I struck one of the 4 deer. But this 5th creature, which also is a 5, came out of the woods while I'm waiting for the state police to report. And it stood about 6 feet tall, had a wingspan of about 8 to 10 feet. It only had one leg. It hopped. It had arms and a long tail, almost the length of it was tall. And devoured one of the deer and threw deer cartilage and blood all over the scene and vanished quickly. I just wonder if you think this possibly, or what do you think of the existence of the Jersey Devil?
Well, you know, one of the interesting things is that actually in Scandinavian legend and folklore, they have tales of a weird animal that supposedly hopped around on one leg. And it was reputedly very vicious. That in itself is interesting. And, there are some sort of tie-ins, as you mentioned, with the Jersey Devil and, again, one of these strange winged creatures. It seems to me that these actually are far more prominent than people realize. You know, stories such as yourself and the last call are both talking about strange winged creatures in different parts of, you know, the continental United States and Mexico. And for me, at least, it shows that whatever these things are, you know, they're not just something that turns up at random every few decades. It seems that, you know, there are a lot of stories out there. We do get, as I said, with some of these reports, like the chupacabras, particularly some of the wing-type reports of the creature exhibiting a lot of vicious activity, and that would seem to also to come into play with this report of the deer being killed and eaten, basically. So, you know, it fits the pattern of a lot of reports. It also fits patterns of, like, Scandinavian folklore as well. So, you know, it's an interesting story.
All right, let's go back to west of the Rockies. You're on the air with us. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi. Back in 2001, me and my older brother, we were camping up in Coleman Canyon, about 30 miles out of Ellensburg, Washington. And we had an encounter, which we believe was a Bigfoot.
Okay.
All right. And what it was we were listening to Art or George, I'm not too sure which one, and you guys played a sound of a Bigfoot over the radio.
Right. We've both done that, yeah.
Yeah. And, well, later on that night after the program, we crawled into our tent with the dog, and we went to go to bed, and, well, we've seen a big shadow-type thing, which we believe was a Bigfoot, walk up on 2 feet, and it ate our dog's food and then threw the dish across the river.
Okay.
All right, and I was wondering what the guest had thought about that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the issue of, to start with, the first thing you brought up, for example, Bigfoot sounds, that's an interesting one. You know, a lot of recordings have been made of, you know, what sounds like or what is believed to be a Bigfoot. And, you know, there have been anything from grunts, growls, to bizarre sort of an animalistic language
almost like whistling sounds.
Yeah, that's right. Ooh, in some cases, yeah. Almost like an ominous, you know, whistling howl that goes from sort of a deep level to a higher level. And a lot of reports actually from Texas that have been recorded by another friend and colleague of mine named Chester Moore. Chester spends a lot of time out in the woods and recorded a lot of strange sounds out there that, you know, he believes are connected with these creatures. So, you know, that in itself isn't strange. And there are, you know, a lot of reports also of Bigfoot, you know, scavenging in, you know, campsites and things like that. people out camping, you know, cooking or whatever, and then in the middle of the night this creature turns up. That does make, you know, to me that sounds credible, and to me it makes me wonder if, you know, if these things are possibly on an evolutionary downslide and there aren't that many of them, maybe, you know, they're forced to come into our environments to some extent, you know, to get food. And, you know, the idea that, you know, they might steal a dog's food, you know, at a campsite or whatever, to me that's not the ordinary. It's not really that different to what bears do. You know, somebody goes out on a camping trip, they set the tent up, they're cooking, and the next thing a grizzly comes in and, you know, steals all the food, and you just have to stand there and watch it.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think that that doesn't sound too strange, and it sounds, you know, it sounds quite plausible. You know, I don't doubt that things like this have, you know, have happened a lot. So.
Okay, thanks for the call. Let's go to our wild card line. Welcome to Coast to Coast. You're on the air with us. I think we have time for a quick one from you. Hi.
Hello. My name's Jim. I'm from Spokane.
Hi. Okay, Jim.
I listen to your show a lot, and every now and then ideas come to me while I'm listening to what's being talked. And my question is, you know, with all the descriptions that they have of gargoyles, you know, we see evil, winged, vicious creatures, and we have the same description of vampires, what do you, Nick, think about possibly one leading into the stories of the other, or vice versa? Could they be a related creature that along the way just different stories evolved?
And all right, go ahead. All right, thanks.
I actually think that could well be the case with a lot of these stories, is that, you know, somebody reports finding a dead animal with the blood drained, and so that gets blamed on a vampire. But then somebody else, but they didn't see the creature. Somebody else reports seeing the creature, but no dead animal. And then a third person reports, you know, an animal found and the creature seen in the vicinity. So I think that what happens is that potentially, you know, somebody finds a dead animal, the image of the vampire is created, but then somebody else sees this winged creature. And I think possibly what's happened is that, you know, it seems we might have two or three different things going on, but they could actually all be a part of the same mystery, but seen from different angles and different perspectives by the various witnesses. You know, I do think it's interesting that Europe has this legend and folklore that proliferated of vampires and blood-sucking creatures, and today we have the same thing going on in Puerto Rico. You know, and I do have to ask the question, is it possible that it's actually, you know, an offshoot of the same thing? You know, it may well be too coincidental to imagine that there are, you know, totally different creatures on different sides of the world, all sucking the blood from animals in similar ways. It would be more plausible that it could be, you know, the same species or offshoots of the same species undertaking all these actions. I think that's definitely possible.
I think so, too. Well, Nick, stick with us. We'll be back in a moment. We're going to continue to take final phone calls with you right here on Coast to Coast AM. Nick Redfern, our special guest. I'll be back. All right. On our next Coast to Coast program, it's Friday night. Art Bell sitting in for me. And his first hour guest will be Evelyn Paglini, then the Ghost Investigators with new EVP sounds. That'll be Friday right here on Coast to Coast AM. Nick, do you still run the U.S. office of the British-based Center for Fortean Zoology?
Yes, I do. The organization's based out of the county of Devon in England, run by a friend of mine, John Downs, who actually went to Puerto Rico with me on the first expedition I did in 2004. And I run the U.S. office, and we basically do a lot of in-the-field investigations, you know, collating witness testimony, you know, promoting conferences and lectures. And actually the British office is organizing an expedition to Guyana next month to look into reports of a Bigfoot type creature there, and also reports of giant anaconda snakes. And that kicks off on November the 12th as a 5-person team going out there. Then
that's exciting. Now, how big do you think the anaconda could be?
Oh, well, Richard Freeman, who's leading the team, Richard's a former zoologist, a head keeper at a zoo in England called Twycross Zoo, and he's leading the expedition. And Richard has already uncovered reports that they're investigating of anacondas in the vicinity of about 60 feet, literally in length. So these literally are, you know, huge things, giant snakes.
Would they swallow a human being?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's no doubt that the natives there have talked about how, you know, these things have literally attacked and swallowed people, eaten people, you know, monstrous-sized snakes. And that, as I said, that kicks off in about 2.5 weeks' time. And they're going down there for a full 2 weeks and got a lot of interviews lined up and places to go and locations to check out. So.
All right, back to the phones we go. Let's pick it up by going to East of the Rockies. Hello there. You're on Coast to Coast.
This is Ann from Texas.
Sure, Ann. Go ahead.
I have a question. I think I saw one of these large birds you're talking about.
Thunderbirds.
It was bizarre. I was outside about 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning. I was smoking a cigarette. Anyway, what caught my attention, and the wind was not blowing, was this big white thing floating in the air, which I couldn't figure out what it was. And the closer it got, I realized something was above it. I don't know if it was plastic. I don't know what it was. And as it passed over, it was above treetop level, but it was low enough. I could almost see the feathers on this thing. It was the most, the wingspan had to have been each wing about 10 foot and 5 foot in width. It was the biggest thing I've ever seen in my life, and it just glided.
Mm-hmm.
I just wondered, do they have feathers? I mean, you can actually see the things.
Yeah. Well, the interesting thing about your report, Anne, is that, as I said earlier in the interview, you know, we get a lot of these reports from Texas. And there was one I mentioned where, you know, the witness had said they'd seen this thing gliding rather than, you know, flapping the wings as a conventional bird would. And, you know, your report and the previous one and the guy in Mexico, it seems, to me at least, this is more evidence that we do have some sort of weird bird-like creature that lives or inhabits the region of Mexico and Texas.
Well, I'm on the eastern side, and we have the big thicket and a lot of remote places, I guess, the thing could hide in, but I have never in my life, I was stunned. I was speechless. I've never seen anything so huge in my entire life.
Well, that's something.
But it was carrying something, had something, you know, I don't know what it was.
What do you think? What did it look like?
Well, what caught my attention, it was kind of white. I don't know if it was some like kind of plastic or something, maybe, you know. It was.
Maybe a rabbit or something?
Oh, good grief, no. What it was carrying was big, you know, so I don't know what in the world this thing had.
A cow.
But I could, it was big, but I could actually see the feathers, and you know how, like on any bird, you know, they kind of, the feathers kind of point out like that. I mean, you can actually see that. Mm. But I was just shocked at how huge it was.
Well, that's something, you know, that sort of comment is one we often get, is that people are just sort of dumbstruck and, you know, frozen.
Oh, I was. I didn't think anybody believed me. I never told anybody.
Yeah, by the actual size of the things. And it's interesting as well that you talk about being near the big thicket, because the big thicket, there's actually been a lot of Bigfoot-type reports from the Big Thicket, which is this area of large forest not too far from Houston. And a guy named Rob Riggs wrote a book called In the Big Thicket, which described all the Bigfoot-type reports there. And there are even a lot of sightings of so-called ghost lights, similar to the Marfa lights, the more famous Marfa lights of Texas, deep in the heart of the Big Thicket. So again, you know, it's an area that attracts two or three different, you know, sort of weird phenomena, shall we say.
Okay, let's go to first-time caller line. Hi there, you're on with Nick Redfern.
Hi, George. Hi, Nick. I was calling to see if there was any update maybe on the Sherman Ranch up in Utah. I know, or the Gorman Ranch, hunt for the Skinwalker.
Yes.
I know George Knapp was on the other day, and I didn't get a catch to hear it. So I was wondering if either one of you had any updates on anything, and is there research still going on up there? And
you know, I have to be honest with you, other than, you know, what's been published in the book and a couple of updates that I saw some months ago, I'm not really aware of anything that's gone on, you know,
okay,
and I wasn't aware of George's, you know, appearance or updates either.
Okay. All right. Great. Thanks, guys.
Okay.
Right. Okay, thank you. Let's go next to our wild card line. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Hello there.
Hi, George. Good morning.
Hi.
This is Clint from Moses Lake, Washington.
Sure thing.
And I had a Bigfoot story for you. It was about 1989. I was about 9 years old. We had a little family reunion. I'm not sure if you're familiar with the area. It's like Larch Mountain or Lurch Mountain area in here.
Okay.
And me and my cousins, we were playing a game of kick the can right before it got too dark for us to see. And there's three, maybe four of us. We were sitting outside hiding from the one that was it. And next thing you know, I felt like, seemed like a pebble hit me in my back.
Hmm.
And I kind of like said, that's weird. Then my cousins said that they started seeing them, where they were coming from. So as he was, as whatever this was throwing them, we would kind of pick them back and toss them back. Well, it, one got me good in the head, and, you know, being 9 years old, I was a little hothead. So I grabbed a good-sized rock, and I chucked it. And evidently, I hit this thing. Are you familiar with the Bigfoot commercials with about the jerky?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you know how he gives that, like, grunt when the line shined in his eye? He gave that kind of, it sounded like that kind of a grunt, but it was like three or four times.
Mm-hmm.
The bushes started rattling, but it went the opposite way. I figured it was going to come towards us, but it actually ran away from us. And nobody believed us except for everybody at the campsite did hear the little grunts and growls. So I was wondering, have you ever heard anything like that before happen to anybody?
You know, I have, in the sense that, you know, as we were talking with George earlier, there are a lot of reports where people said, you know, Bigfoot throws rocks and stones, a number of cases that fall into that category, and almost that seem to, like, it exhibits, like, playfulness or curiosity and interacting with people. This is kind of a little bit different, but there are even reports of what have become known in Bigfoot activity of so-called stick signs, where people have been wandering around the area of Bigfoot activity and have found what look like sticks laid out in strange patterns on the ground, almost like a, I guess, a language or a sign language. And although that's not strictly, you know, what you're talking about, there are certainly a lot of reports where there's been this almost like a curiosity when people are around, and, you know, the creature's been seen watching them or taking an interest in them, and, or in, like, you know, in your case, you know, pebbles and rocks being thrown back and forth. So, you know, that to me isn't something that, you know, I haven't heard before. It's actually quite a, you know, a common aspect of the subject. You know, again, I think it demonstrates that we're looking at a creature that has intelligence, that, you know, that may be shy of people, wants to keep its distance, but equally is kind of, you know, interested in us in the same way as well.
Okay, see, my family, we're actually Cheyenne Native Americans.
Okay.
And none of the adults said anything bad about it. The only thing they said was to go talk to grandmother.
Mm.
And grandmother was starting to tell us some of the older stories about our grandfathers and so on and so forth, also seeing this kind of stuff. So,
yeah, and I think that's one of the areas that, for me, is the most important ones, is the fact that, you know, there is a long history. If you look back, you know, well, as you obviously know, with Native American Indian legends, there is a long, rich history of Bigfoot reports. You know, the skeptics are always saying, oh, well, why didn't people see Bigfoot before the 1940s, 50s, 60s? In actual fact, there are countless reports, you know, in Native American legends and tales, etc., of these, you know, hairy, large, wild men of the woods. So I think, you know, this is an important aspect of the subject, chronicling these early reports that, you know, whether they've either been passed down verbally or, you know, in texts and things like that, you know, it gives a good indication that this is an ancient creature that's, you know, has lived in the woods for, you know, however long, you know, maybe as long as we've existed.
All right, thanks, Nick. Wildcard line, you're on the air with us. Hello there.
Hey, how you doing, George?
We're doing great, thanks.
First of all, I just want to say that Park Sierra, Force Space, Night Flight, we all listen to you. We all love you.
Well, great. Guess, thank you. And hello to all of you out there.
All right. I got a question for Nick also.
Hi.
Okay. The theory that back before, you know, written history and all that stuff, as humans, that we may be actually aliens to this planet. Is there a possibility that as we are aliens to this planet, we may have brought, you know, different foreign animals with us, and if those animals still exist, you know, today, or they may have died out, such as, you know, dragons. You don't hear anything about dragons nowadays, but back in the day, through all of, you know, recorded history, different civilizations talk about dragons. Now, is there a possibility that, you know, any of the animals on the world today are actually foreign to this world?
You know, that's an interesting theory. I mean, that is one, as far as which ones potentially we could put into that category. When I was on Puerto Rico, on each occasion, you know, I came across these stories time and again where people linked the chupacabras with UFOs, and various people offered the theory, particularly on the first occasion when I went in 2004, that maybe, you know, this was some sort of creature that had been released onto the island by, you know, an alien intelligence, really just to, you know, to test how it reacts and, you know, how it interacts with the population, or just basically as like a feeding ground for it, I guess is a better term. So, you know, that, as fantastic or as controversial as that might sound, you know, you actually have people on the island of Puerto Rico who are basically supporting the exact same scenario that you're talking about. And I mean, even with Bigfoot, you know, although it gets into controversial areas, there are actually quite a few reports of people saying they saw Bigfoot in conjunction with UFOs or weird lights in the sky. You know, people talking about the space people coming down in old legends and, you know, bringing this hairy creature with them. You know, it could be, you just don't know. I think, you know, some of the stories sound outlandish and controversial and they tend to be ignored. But, you know, I think we're not going to solve the mystery unless we look at all the various angles. And, you know, maybe we are. Maybe the Earth itself is just like some huge cosmic zoo for, you know, a higher intelligence that occasionally drops things off on the planet and watches to, you know, to see what they do and how we react to them. And, you know, or maybe that, I mean, one of the theories, maybe it's just random creatures, you know, that are dropped off here that's, you know, with no actual rhyme or reason to it. And the fact that we're here may be sort of secondary. You know, it may have nothing to do with us in terms of trying to develop an interaction. It may just be that, you know, these things are dumped here, who knows, for whatever reason.
It's the prison planet, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly, like a prison planet scenario. Yeah, the idea that maybe there are creatures out there, that vicious creatures, who knows, you know, what the reason is, and we're basically the dropping-off point for them, and let the Earth people get on with it, and if they want to deal with them, that's fine. If they don't, that's fine, too.
So, tell us about the seance you held at Roswell.
Oh, yeah, no, that was very weird. That's one of the strangest things I think I've ever got involved in. In the latter part of 2005, I traveled to Roswell with a number of friends and colleagues, one being Jim Mars, another one being Josh Warren, a well-known ghost hunter.
Yeah,
had him on the show many times. And a couple of psychics, Karen Reese and Laura Lee and Heidi Hollis, an author, couple of other people. And basically what we did, we went to Roswell with a view to trying to basically resolve what happened, you know, with the Roswell incidents. Now, of course, you know, all sorts of attempts have been made to resolve the puzzle, interviewing witnesses, you know, going to archives, trying to find files, that sort of thing. We took a different approach, and the idea was to determine, well, you know, if something crashed, whatever it was, and bodies were found and, you know, entities were killed, is it possible that, you know, the psychics we had with us could psychically contact the life force of the soul or the soul of the entities that were killed at Roswell, you know? And some people may think that's controversial. Some people may think it's, you know, completely makes sense. So this is what we did. We had the psychics basically try and contact the entities from Roswell. And we actually held a seance in Hangar 84, a midnight seance in the hangar where reportedly the bodies were taken after the crash. Now, what was very, very strange is that a number of weird things happened while we were in the hangar. One of the people with us fell to the floor feeling nauseous and sick. and the cameras that we had that were set up to record the seance, at one point, although we weren't aware of anything at the time, we were just sat at the table holding hands, intensely concentrating and listening as the psychics, Karen and Laura, tried to pick up on, you know, some sort of entity and question them. It was only when the film was played back that at some point in the film, a very, very strange-looking creature flashes across the screen above our heads at a height of about 6 feet, I would say, or 4 to 6 feet, something like that. And it looks like a coiling snake-like animal, but almost like a spectral snake is the best. Imagine what the ghost of a snake might look like. That's the best way to describe it, like semi-transparent, but coiling around us and, you know, seemed to be very, very weird and menacing and just in the screen for a moment or two, but there's no doubt it was there and we recorded it on the screen. I would have to say that's one of the strangest events I've been involved in because it seemed to relate to several different areas, one being UFOs with Roswell, another one being potentially cryptozoology with a weird spectral animal, and thirdly, with psychic phenomena, with the two psychics, Laura and Karen, trying to pick up on whatever was going on. So, you know, does that mean all these phenomena are connected? Maybe it does. But that, for me, and seeing this coiling snake-like creature was, you know, like a defining moment. And
oh, yeah.
A very weird.
It's a little jarring. Nick, yeah. We are out of time. The name of the book, Memoirs of a Monster Hunter. Mm-hmm. And you, my friend, invited back any time you want.
Well, I appreciate that, George. I've enjoyed it. Thank you.
Okay, that's Nick Redfern. And don't forget Friday night, Art Bell sitting in for me. That's strange, isn't it? It's the other way around most of the time. It used to be. Wayne Roberts, Dan Galante, Steve Carr, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasseur, Ross Mitchell, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell. They all bring you Coast to Coast AM. I'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.